Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of the Daily Fringe Show. I'm your host, Nicholas Lorimer, today joined by Michael Morris. Let's get into our first news story of today, and this is the remarkable social media post done by a Twitter account, or an X account rather, called Josie versus Josie. This has also prompted an article written by our CEO, John Andrus, which we'll get into in a second. But basically, what this account does is it compares essentially South Africa at the sort of height of the democratic era, that is around 2010, when the economy was growing, when much of the city's infrastructure had been, you know, lots of new infrastructure had been rolled out. A lot of things in South Africa were working pretty well. Joblessness was going down, the economy was growing, and yes, South Africa did have very big problems. But by and large, the country was on the right track. This account compares Johannesburg in that period to Johannesburg now, in 2024, after the Zuma years, after the first term of President Ramaphosa, and after the chaos in the management of Johannesburg as a city since the instability and coalition started towards the end of the Mashaba term. So this account is being run by a concerned citizen who's been interviewed by the media. In this case, I think Times Live. He says he wants to remain anonymous, but he did say to the media, quote, "I grew up in the West Rand and went to boarding school and studied at Wits University. I've experienced every crevasse of the city. Johannesburg has integrated on the basic level. The quality of roads, traffic lights, and street lights that are not working. Those three things stand out for everyone who lives in Johannesburg, and that is the broad devolution of the city." He says in particular to blame seems to be the Johannesburg Roads Agency, which he said is the most obvious dropping of the ball when it comes to infrastructure here. He said, this guy continued to say, "The road infrastructure is the most troubling. The JRA has seen a catastrophic decline of not patching potholes or painting lines on roads. I drove through Witkoppen in April and hit a pothole which dented my I continued driving because I couldn't stop anywhere since it was dark." He said he wanted to compare democratic Joburg when it was at its peak and students would walk through the streets of Bromfontein and come across European tourists or walk across Nelson Mandela Bridge to catch taxis with no concerns for their safety to today. However, he says that people have become desensitized to the city's dysfunction and its problems and that Johannesburg no longer has any hope. Our boss, the CEO of the Institute of Race Relations, wrote an article on Politics Web called Joburg then, 15 years ago, and now. "If the basics are beyond the city's reach, what hope is there for more complex challenges? The same administration for allowing weeds to sprout through cracked pavements is also tasked with maintaining Johannesburg's drinking water systems, water purification plants, and electricity distribution goals. These systems require a high level of competence and oversight, yet the same officials who cannot keep street name signs upright are entrusted with preventing large-scale infrastructure failure. Is it any wonder then that Johannesburg's water supply is plagued by outages?" He goes on to say, "The decline of the past 10 to 15 years is clear for all to see. It is up to the city's leadership to reverse this trend before it is too late. But if they cannot handle the small things, how can we expect them to fix the big ones? In 2026, voters will have the chance to elect a new city leadership. They should study Josie versus Josie photos carefully before entering the polling booth and vote accordingly." Michael, you know, I've lived my whole life in Joburg, and particularly I would say in the last 3 or 4 years, but it has been a thing I've noticed sort of throughout my entire life. Basically, when I was just about to leave school was when Joburg was probably at its peak. I compare it to now, the decline is real, and it's not just in nice leafy suburbs which are no longer as nice or as leafy. It's every part of the city, from even places which had new shiny new infrastructure put in like 2010 are now already seeing some of that infrastructure crumble. What's your take of this?
I mean, I think Josie versus Josie deserves a medal for his efforts, and it's fantastic that that he also shared these images, or a number of these images, with John Andrus, our CEO. I highly recommend to viewers and listeners to go and have a look at that piece, both for the sentiments that John explores, as well as the images, the you know additional images that are used there, as well as in the Times Live piece that you mentioned. And, you know, the thing that comes to mind with stories like this is that phrase lived experience, which, you know, is to be intended to be abused in the kind of woke era. but nevertheless does speak to something which we understand as liberals, and that is that where individuals live and how they live is the reality of the society. That is what the society is. And you suggested earlier this idea, Nicholas, that we kind of get used to these things. There's a kind of complacency that sets in by default. We're certainly not a complacent society, but you do unfortunately become inured to the way things are. There's this idea that, you know, this is just how it is. We've kind of got to accept it. And then over time, you become acclimatized to a much lower level, to a completely unacceptable level of non-governance, essentially. And this is really an opportunity to bring us up sharp and to say, hang on a second, just look at the evidence here. And these photographs do achieve that effect very effectively. You look at a crossroads or a corner of two streets in Johannesburg, or some particular site, a very very narrowly focused site, and the difference is chalk and cheese over just a few years. So it brings home to us that the real transformation of the society, as we were chatting before the show, is not this the new Jerusalem that everybody really wants to focus on. There's a kind of glorious vision of what we could be, and however valid that might be, and however wonderful, the way to get to the new Jerusalem is actually to fix the pavement, fix the traffic light, clear the weeds, paint the street signs. So I think Josie versus Josie, big kudos due to this individual. It really does bring out precisely what the challenge is in our society. I'd just like to draw attention to one or two thoughts in John Endres's piece this morning, where he says that investors are not just deterred by the obvious signs of neglect. They understand that the inability to perform basic tasks is a symptom of a deeper dysfunction. And it's in this sense that he goes on. He says, this is not just an abstract economic concern. It's the daily reality for millions of people who call Johannesburg home. And this is in a society where unemployment is high, investment continues to flee, the city becomes less able to generate revenue needed to fix these problems, the failure to collect rates and taxes combined with a shrinking tax base means less money to address the very issues that are driving the city into decline. And what we see is a classic vicious cycle of neglect, economic decline, and governance failure. So it's not just a question of a suburban concern. It's not just a question of ratepayers being worried about some inconvenience. It's actually central to our economic performance. First and foremost, is the leading capital city in Africa, and our economic performance as a country. So yeah, very serious, Nicholas.
Very well put. All right, let's move on to our next story. And this is about the South African Communist Party, which has been expressing a lot of concern with the ANC's decision to go into the government of national unity with the DA and the Freedom Front Plus in particular. The SACP has said that it is once again considering whether it is going to run in elections separate from the tripartite alliance with the ANC and COSATU. They say that up until now, they haven't done so because they believe that enacting their what they call progressive plan or progressive reform, as they describe it, is much more achievable from within the ANC, but they are now considering alternatives to the ANC. The Secretary General said that the ANC had capitulated to capitalist and right-wing forces. He said, quote, the socialist axis of the alliance can no longer rely solely on seeking reconfiguration from within while continuing to build a vanguard character of the SACP. We will intensify efforts to forge a popular left front and build a powerful socialist movement of workers and poor. This shall form a part of a broader imperative of reconfiguring the alliance, including from without, and remains open in our modalities to contest the battle of democracy, including through elections, as further elaborated by our recently held augmented central committee. So yeah, that's a very gobbledygook socialist way of saying what I said at the beginning. But basically, I say go decade. The SACP has been such a toxic influence on the ANC for many, many decades. Almost all of the worst ideas the ANC has embraced have come at some point from the SACP. Let us not also forget that groups like the SACP very eagerly supported Zuma and his capture of the ANC and driving away from some of the more successful policies of the sort of first decade of the 2000s. And this party has been deriving a lot of benefit from being attached to the ANC without giving much back, as far as I can see, except making the country slightly worse. So go ahead, stand in the election, win your four seats or whatever you're going to stand, and then maybe we can stop taking you so seriously. Michael, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, it probably would be a very useful thing to actually demonstrate to ourselves just how hostile we actually are as a society to bad ideas. We don't really like bad ideas. We don't like radicalism. We don't like revolutionary sentiments. We actually want quite sensible things, most of us. And the very poor performance of bad parties has over and over demonstrated that this is actually so. So it would be a wonderful thing, I'm sure, a wonderful illustration of just exactly where people's real hopes lie, what they're putting their hopes on. But on the other hand, there's also something somewhat kind of regretful about this, in a way that, you know, we need countervailing forces in society. We need good arguments about what it is we want to do. And it's just such a pity that they come up with these tired old sort of 1930s or even Victorian phraseology and all that sort of rhetoric that's so laden with completely outdated sort of sentiments about what the economy is, how the economy works best, what helps poor people the best. And there's none of those things, unfortunately. And the 20th century is really the monument to the failure of all these things. So it's what a pity, you know, that you could have. I mean, they're very smart people, I think, on the left. I've often thought that, you know, even the ANC has benefited to some extent by some of those very smart people in the negotiating period. Some of the realists were in fact on the left, but they tend to fail to rise to the occasion. They fail to rise to the challenge of actually engaging with the reality for a start, and with what people actually want. And what people want is not to be told what's good for them. They don't want to be told that, you know, there's some great sort of social heroism in where they've got to live their lives. They actually just want to choose how to live their lives on their own, and they have the most opportunity to be the agents of you know, changing their own lives and changing society and so on. And it just seems that this is a terrific hurdle for the left to sort of get over. And if they could, you know, there's a chance they could make a very significant contribution to discussing things, or to just, you know, introducing second thoughts into things that we want to do. This is not a bad thing, but on the present scale of things, this is unlikely. As you say, you know, go ahead. I think this is probably quite a good test of their actual popularity and actual credibility in our society.
Very much so. Look, I mean, could always be wrong. I thought MK would get 5% of the vote, and they ended up getting sort of 14. So maybe there are people out there longing for the Communist Party to appear in the electoral space, but I very much doubt it. And particularly when that space is so contested already by the EFF and MK as well, who will offer very similar policy positions, despite what the SACP would like you to believe. When it comes to some of this stuff. Anyway, last thing, the MK party has published its internal constitution, which, as one might expect, is not very democratic at all. The constitution has no described mechanism for how its leadership is to be elected. I guess the implication is that once appointed or self-appointed or elected the first time, there's no need ever to contest such things again. Indeed, Jacob Zuma appears to hold all the power within the party, able to issue decrees to sort out all internal disputes and issue instructions. And he also handpicks the entire leadership of the party himself, effectively making himself the undisputed dictator of the MK party. Let us remind ourselves that even a party like the EFF, which is very closely sort of revolves around the personality cult of Julius Malema still has internal elections, and at the very least, there is still at least some competition for positions within that party. Apparently, the MK party appears to have no such intentions. Furthermore, the MK party called for an institution of the country to be created that would essentially be an upper house that would consist of traditional leaders who would be able to have a legislative power and veto power laws passed by the parliament. It also seeks to fuse this institution with MK party itself, with a sort of senior leadership council, a royal house, as it's described, of all of the traditional leaders in the country, which will interface directly with the MK party should it come to power. It's actually amazing how there's not even much of a pretense of believing in democratic institutions in the MK party's constitution, it seems. Michael, any thoughts?
I mean, you know, to the extent that it appears to solidify the association between the party and Jacob Zuma, this could be, you know, a somewhat encouraging thing in a way, in the sense that once Jacob Zuma is out of the way, perhaps the party will cease to have any kind of internal coherence. But, I don't think one should be entirely complacent about it. I mean, his daughter is, after all, quite a prominent figure here, and probably quite likely something of an MR's grease in the background, and clearly has, you know, a fairly long life likely ahead of her. So the makings of a fairly autocratic party that might appeal to the more conservative elements in the rural communities, maybe communities who do set great store by traditional leadership structures and the way things work under them, could indeed have some kind of appeal and therefore pose some kind of risk. My inclination is, you know, with a society that's rapidly urbanizing, I think 70% of South Africans are now living in urban areas, and the UN Habitat, I think, estimates that would reach about 80% by 2050, I think the date is. This is, you know, quite significant. This is a very ordinary sort of modern phenomenon across the world. I'm pretty sure that in an urban environment where people really want to be part of the middle class rather than part of a sort of still to be liberated peasant class or working class, this kind of idea is not going to be very popular. But I still think it poses a risk, and it's just as well we keep a pretty close eye on it and know why it is that we resist the kind of appeal that it might offer.
I agree with that completely. Okay, that's all the time we have for today. We hope you found the show interesting. Sorry for any tech issues on my side. Hopefully they won't be too bad in the final recording, but I hope you all have a wonderful day. That's a wrap. The Daily Friend Show and The Daily Friend are a project of the Institute of Race Relations, the IRR. The IRR is a think tank which was founded in 1929 to study race relations in South Africa and works to change government policy to improve race relations through non-racialism and to ensure the prosperity of all South Africans. If you like our work and would like to support us, please go to irr.org.za and click Support the IRR. Or you can go to thedailyfriend.co.za and click the Fund Us button.